Now, we're coming to Luke really this morning at a very, very long passage, but we're not going to go through it verse by verse, so you can be relieved by that. We'll just take some of the key ideas out of this passage and sort of rope them together and see how that applies to our lives. I think really one of the big themes of this passage is, who is king? Is it Nabal, David, or God? Yeah, and that's really what we have to look at. But we see how God will use this remarkable woman, Abigail, in restraining and in bringing words of great wisdom to David in particular. But as we read through this passage, what we really find is that Abigail is like a rose between two thorns. She really is a rose between two thorns as we go through this. Now, the setting for this passage is that Samuel has died. Remember, Samuel had been the man that we began to look at last week, and now we've had his birth, and now we've skipped through to his death. And he had ruled over Israel as one of the judges. But in his time, they also appointed a king who was Saul, King Saul. And Saul, of course, was a king that often behaved badly. This is a passage of people that behaved badly. Saul was a king who behaved badly, and because of that, he lost the kingship in the sense that God rejected him as king. And his story is one of obsession to build a lasting dynasty for himself. But he's out of the picture in this passage, at least. Samuel's death must have been a great blow to David, because David was the man that Samuel anointed to be king under the commandment of God, who would be the man that would lead Israel. Now, life must have been quite difficult for David, and we know as we read through the passages up to this point, you'll find that it is. Here we find him in Paran, the wilderness, and that's because Saul is pursuing him and hunting down his life, because he knows that David has been anointed king and will replace him. And there will be no lasting dynasty for Saul as king. Now, he's forced out into the desert, but obviously it's not a complete wilderness, because as we read through the passage, we'll see that the desert or the wilderness that he was in was able to sustain large flocks of sheep and of goats. 4,000 animals are out there grazing and feasting. Now, as we come up to this point in 1 Samuel 25, if you read through the narrative, you would have learned by this point a lot about Samuel, a lot about Saul, and a lot about David. But now, two new characters are introduced into the story. Two new characters, Nabal and Abigail, and they're a married couple, husband and wife. And when new characters are introduced, then we need to listen, because God is really telling us something in his word by introducing these new characters into this word. And the first thing I want us to look at this morning is Abigail. Abigail was married to a harsh and graceless man. Married to a harsh and graceless man. That is not what people look for in marriage. That's certainly, surely not, to be married to a harsh and graceless man. No woman wants that, and indeed no man, on the other hand, wants to be married to a harsh and graceless woman. Now, before we're introduced to him by name, we're introduced to his home, and we're introduced to his wealth. This is a very, very rich man. He's got a business in Carmel, and he's very rich, we're told there, as we read through in verses 2 and 3. Actually, literally could be translated very great, but actually the better translation here is very rich, because his greatness lay in his riches and not in his character, and that's what will come out very much in this passage. While on the other hand, we're told about Abigail in verse 3 that she was discerning and beautiful, and this is in contrast to Nabal, who was very harsh and badly behaved, we're told. That's how it describes him. And harsh and badly behaved in verse 3. So there's a contrast. And this isn't simply talking about that he's having a bad day. It's talking about his character, the kind of man that he is every day. this harsh man and badly behaved. And from that opening statement, really, the writer is preparing us for all the things that are going to follow and the way that this man behaves and the way that he acts and the consequences that comes because of that. And indeed, it comes out in his own words in verse 10 and 11 in his response to the men that David sent to him for some assistance. And then in verse 17, the servant, the unnamed servant, speaks about him being a worthless man. Who can speak to him? And in 21, David also speaks of him being evil. And in verse 25, Abigail herself speaks of this man being a foolish man, a fool. So that's kind of the overview of this passage. Now, we may indeed wonder how inert could a woman like Abigail, who's described as discerning and beautiful, be married to a man such as this, who is harsh and badly behaved? Now, the picture of this passage of Abigail, we see a woman of character. We see a woman of beauty. We see a woman who is creative and a woman who's articulate. We see also a woman who is full of wisdom and of social graces, and who has deep and profound spiritual understanding. How on earth is she married then to a man who lacks all of that? Well, in the ancient world, marriages were often arranged. Parents arranged them, and you didn't have a say in it in that sense. They probably thought that Nabal was a good catch. He's a wealthy man. That would be a secure future. But obviously, it was a very unhappy one. Here is a man who's self-centered, greedy, gets his own way, has the final word on everything. Nobody can reason with him, and everybody knew what he was like. Even the unnamed servant in verse 17 speaks of him as a worthless man that no one could speak to. No one could speak to. Surely none of us would like to have that said about us, that he's unreasonable. Nobody can reason with him. Nobody can talk to him. We probably like to think that we're different, but we may well at times be like that. This man was a bully and really a thug in many ways. He must have been a nightmare to work for, and he must have been a nightmare to live with. You get the idea that he's the kind of man that if he comes home and his dinner was a minute late, he would blow his lid because his dinner wasn't on the table. He's harsh and badly behaved. That's not just him having a bad day. That's the character, the nature, and the behavior of the man daily. Abigail must have lived on eggshells, really, tiptoeing round this man. Tiptoeing. But there are many women in marriages like that, aren't they? They sort of tiptoe around their husbands. You know, they're always trying to cook just the perfect dinner. They're always just trying to say the perfect thing, the right thing. And they're always having to drop everything immediately because their husband wants it now when he's looking for something. That's the state of many marriages in the world that we live in. You know, when England were playing in the 2014 World Cup, that a lot of women were verbally and physically abused by their husbands when England got knocked out. You know, what kind of marriage is that? When somebody is prepared to beat up his wife, physically or verbally, because his football team loses. But a lot of women live with that kind of conditions all the time. Not just about football, but with other things. There are a lot of men who are gentlemen outside of the house, but in the house, they're tyrants. They're tyrants. They play the gentleman outside of the house, but inside the house, they're not gentlemen. Now, Nabal, of course, didn't play the gentleman inside the house or outside of the house. He said, what you see is what you get, and if you don't like it, tough. That was his attitude, inside or outside of the house. Now, of course, there's always a time when a man like Nabal will overstep himself, and he oversteps himself. He just gets too sure of himself, too sure that he can say and do what he likes, where he likes, when he likes, and everybody else has to put up with that. And it comes in this passage when he oversteps the mark with David. And it comes in this sense in verses 4 to 9 when David sends some of his men to ask Nabal for supplies. And indeed he does it in a very courteous and a very polite way. And he actually uses covenant language. And by covenant language I mean he speaks to Nabal out of the scriptures, paraphrasing that which God had said. He paraphrases in a sense. David heard in the wilderness, verse 4, that Nabal was shearing his sheep. So David sent 10 young men, and David said to the young men, "Go to Carmel and to Nabal and greet him in my name, and thus you shall greet him. Peace be to you, and peace be to your house, and peace be to all that you have." That's covenant language. It's taken us back really to Numbers chapter 6 and verses 24 through to 26 when we're told, "May the Lord bless you and keep you and shine upon you with his face and be gracious to you." That's really what David is saying to this man. May the Lord bless you and keep you and shine upon you with his face and may he be gracious to you. And then he also gives this testimony about how David and his men, his servants, have treated Nabal, say, livestock and stuff. Remember, David is hiding out in this wilderness from Saul, who's pursuing his life, along with 600 men. And as they're there, Nabal's shepherds have got out there, and actually David and his men become like a source of protection to them. And they're there, and they protect these guys, and they felt good about having him around, because they felt safe and secure. Often in the ancient world, it was no surprise to wake up and find a lot of your animals gone. So there's a sense of protection here. In fact, the fact that Nabal still has 3,000 sheep and 1,000 goats is no doubt down to the protection that David and his men had given to his shepherds and to the animals when they were in the wilderness. Now this shows us something of David's difficulty. Running from Saul, he's got 600 men to feed. Where's he going to get the supplies from? In 1 Samuel 21 verse 6, he's already gone to the priests, and he was able to get bread from the priest. If you read that passage there, and it was the holy bread the priest gave to him and his men. Now, the day that he sends his men to Nabal is a feast day. It's a feast day, so he expects Nabal to be a little bit generous in regard because of that. And also bearing the testimony how they have actually been a source of protection to Nabal's animals and to his men. Now the name Nabal actually means fool. I thought about this and I thought, who on earth would give their child a name like this? Who would give their child a name like this? Whether it's the name his parents gave him or whether it's the name that others came to know him by. But that's his name in passage here. And in Psalm 14, as we read to start with this morning, it says this, "For the fool," or literally the Hebrew word is Nabal, "for the Nabal speaks folly in his heart." This is actually from Isaiah 32, verse 6. "For the Nabal speaks folly in his heart, is busy with iniquity, and practices ungodliness, and utters error concerning the Lord, to leave the craving of the hungry unsatisfied, and deprives the thirsty of drink." You see, what Nabal's response here to David's men is, who is this David? Why should I take my bread, my water, and my meat, and give it to him? That's his response. So he leaves the cravings of David's men, their hunger and their thirst, unsatisfied. Fits the context very well. What is he doing here? Well, he plays ignorance. Verse 5. David sends his men to him, but Nabal plays ignorance. He says, who is this David? In that verses 9 onwards. He says, who is this David? Well, what kind of question is that? David, of course, was the David who put to death Goliath on the battlefield. And he was known throughout Israel. For somebody to ask the question, who is this David? He was either living on another planet or was just playing the fool. And David himself says to his men, "Greet him in my name." So David expects that this man knows exactly who he is. "Greet him in my name." And indeed, if it wasn't for David, the Philistines would have had a feast long ago on Nabal's flocks. Because David was fighting against the Philistines, he would have had no sheep left if it wasn't for men like David that were leading the campaigns against this nation that was rising up. And we see here also that he knows very well who David is, because he says, "Who is this son of Jesse? Who is this son of Jesse?" The men didn't announce David as the son of Jesse. He knows fine who he is. And then he says, many servants are breaking away from their masters. He knows exactly that David has broken away from Saul. He's broken away from Saul because Saul was hunting him down. He had no choice but to break away from him. So here we find a man who's pretending to be ignorant, who's provocative, who's smug in doing it. And yet, here is a very foolish man who makes himself an enemy of the future king of Israel over a few sheep. Is that really worth making yourself an enemy of the future king of Israel? But we all make ourselves enemies of God over a few things that we want to hold on to closely. We make ourselves enemies of God. What he's doing here really is, it's not just a few sheep that's the real issue here. He's rejecting David as God's king. He's rejecting God's plans for Israel. And he's favoring Saul as king. Now, Saul was king at the time. David was anointed king to replace him. And under Saul's kingship, there was nothing in the way of spiritual appetite. There was no, spiritual things didn't come very high in the reign of Saul. And there is no surprise that we find men like Nabal who are materialists. You see, men like Nabal were materialists. They weren't covenant keepers. David greeted him in the words of the covenant. He rejects it. He's a materialist. He's not interested in God's future plans for Israel. He's interested in food and drink and meat and his property. My bread, my wine, my meat. Or my bread, my water, my meat. And we'll find him at the end of the passage having a feast like a king. That's what he's living for. But those that were spiritually minded followed David because they knew that David was God's anointed king. And they were looking for a spiritual restoration of the land. Now this man Nabal came after the descendant Cabal. But he was certainly not a faithful man like his ancestor. So we ask the question again, how on earth could a woman like this, who's described so wonderfully in this passage, be married to a man like this? That's a question. You know, Nabal was a small-minded man, and small-minded people can't see the wood for the trees until a tree comes crashing through the house. But there was just about 400 trees about to crash through this man's house. This is David's response. Verses 13, David says to his men, "And David said to his men, every man strap a sword to his side, and every man, and every one of them strapped a sword to his side. David also strapped his sword. And about 400 men went up after David, while 200 men stayed with the baggage or with the supplies." 400 men. And in verse 21, David says, "Now David said, surely in vain I have guarded all that this fellow has in the wilderness, so that nothing was missing of all his belongings that belonged to him, and he has returned evil for good." So David himself had done this man a great favor. Well, that brings us to our second point for this morning. Abigail appeals to David for Nabal's life on the grounds of Nabal's foolishness. Abigail appeals to David for Nabal's life on the grounds of Nabal's foolishness. Now, he was a foolish man. And he was indeed. And people who are foolish people often have other people in the background cleaning up their mess and apologizing for their mess and trying to straighten out the mess that they have created. Now, fortunately for Nabal, he had two people. There's the unnamed servant that we read about in verses 14 through to 17, who recognized the seriousness of the situation, and he went to Abigail. And that's the other person who clears up this mess. Look at verses 14 through to 17. But one of the young men told Abigail, Nabal's wife, "Behold, David sent messengers out of the wilderness to greet our master, and he railed at them. Yet the men were very good to us, and we suffered no harm, and we did not miss anything when they were in the fields, as long as we went with them. They were a wall to us, both day and night, by day and by night, and while we were with them keeping the sheep. Therefore, know this and consider what you should do, for harm is determined against our master and against all his household, and he is such a worthless man that one cannot speak to him." This is what the servant says. Imagine having that said to you about your husband. He's a worthless man and nobody can speak to him. Now here, the word worthless in this context here, it really means determined to do evil, determined to go in another direction. Notice the good testimony that this man gave to David and the foolish way that Nabal has behaved, the stupidity of him, and that just a breath stood between himself and death at this moment. The urgency is expressed in words of verse 27. "Now therefore, know this and consider what you should do, for harm." He says, sorry, let me read that again. "Now, know this and consider what you should do, for harm is determined against our master and against all his house." Why does he go to Abigail? He goes to Abigail because he knows he would be wasting his breath with Nabal. And what he's really saying is, look, you're a wise, discerning woman. Consider this and do something, because disaster is standing at the door. It's in your hands. And of course, Abigail wastes no time here. She wastes no time. As we read through this story, she gathers together a large amount of supplies, and she doesn't consult Nabal, we're told in the story. Why? Because she'd be wasting her breath to consult Nabal. And she makes a move out towards David. And that's the first thing here. We see in her both wisdom and courage. Verse 20, we see in her wisdom and courage. And it says, "And as she rode on the donkey and came down under the mountain, behold, David and his men came down towards her, and she met them." That's what she does. She goes out to meet David, because she knows if there's any chance of appeasing David, it needs to be put some distance between himself and distance between Nabal. Because if David arrived at Nabal's property, there would be no calming him down. There would be no chance of survival should he land on the property. So she puts distance between herself and Nabal, and distance between David and Nabal. Secondly, she honors him. In verses 23 to 25, we see how she honors David and how she speaks to him here. "And Abigail saw David. She hurried and got down from the donkey and fell before David on her face and bowed to the ground. She fell at his feet and said, 'On me alone, my Lord, be the guilt. Please let your servant speak in your ears and hear the words of your servant. Let not, my Lord, regard this worthless fellow Nabal, for as his name is, so is Nabal." His name is his name. Nabal is his name, and folly is with him, she says. So she speaks of her own husband the way the servant spoke of her husband. Quite a contrast in the way that she treats David and his men in comparison to how Nabal had treated David and his men. But we also see her courage here and her wisdom. Her courage in the sense that she approaches David and she offers herself to be a substitute for her husband. "Let the guilt fall on me," she says. "Let the guilt fall on me." And who is she offering herself to be a substitute for? Well, as the passage says, one who's worthless, one who was bent on doing evil. who was concerned not with the purposes of God, but who was concerned with his sheep, his goats, his bread, and his water. Surely we see something here in her offering herself as a substitute in the greater Mershad in the New Testament, the Lord Jesus, who comes and gives himself as a substitute for sinners who are bent on doing evil and who are willing and deliberately doing it. You know, we're not always that interested in Jesus. And there was a point in our lives when we certainly had no interest in Jesus. None at all. We were interested in our money, in our possessions, in our property, perhaps our houses, our cars, our breads, and our meat, but not in Jesus. Third thing here is Abigail wants David to understand that God is using her to restrain David, to restrain her. Look at what she says in verse 25 and verse 26. Now then, my Lord, as the Lord lives and as your soul lives, because the Lord has restrained you from blood guilt and from saving with your own hand. She wants David to understand that God has put her on this mission. She wants him to understand that shedding Nabal's blood, as much as he would like to do it, was wrong. Because Nabal's death would not be a death on the battlefield, and it would not be an honourable one, but one of revenge. And what she's really saying here is, look, I'm married to a fool, but you don't have to behave as a fool either. And that's what she's saying very graciously. She says, I'm married to a man who's a fool, but you don't need to play the fool either. And it's very easy, isn't it, for all of us to play the fool. You know, somebody says something and we strap a sword to our side. We get hot under the collar and we want to cut them down. We want to cut them down. But as I was saying to the children, you know, put it on freeze. You know, when they freeze frame something on the TV. When a situation arises, stop and just freeze and think it through before you take any action. Before you strap a sword onto your side and before you want to cut somebody down, stop. Think it through. The consequences and your actions. I wonder, have you got a sword strapped to your side this morning? Have you got a sword strapped to your side? Is there somebody that you would really like to cut down? Is there? Don't behave like that. Don't become harsh and foolish. Don't behave badly, because everybody else will see it. And you'll only end up regretting it, and there will be consequences for it. Well, how does Abigail seek to calm David down? Well, there's brilliance really in her, what she has to say here. Verse 28. You get verse 28 here. Please forgive the trespass of your servant, for the Lord will certainly make my Lord a sure house. She also speaks about David fighting the Lord's battles, not a personal battle. What she does is she brings God into the picture. She brings the Lord into the picture. And as she brings God into the picture, her purpose is to move David's mindset from one mindset to another mindset. And that's what the gospel's all about. When we share the gospel with people, we're trying to move their mindset from one mindset to another mindset. We're giving them the information and the resources that God by his Spirit can use to move their minds from one position to another position, so that they come to a reasonable decision and that they don't play the fool. Well, very briefly, our third point here. Abigail appeals to David on the grounds of his kinship, or Abigail appeals to David for Nabal's life on the grounds of David's kinship. Abigail was a woman of sound mind, and David was a man at this time that was enraged. He was behaving badly, just as badly as Nabal. He was a man that was enraged, and she wants to turn him back to a sound mindset. That's what she wants to do. And she does that by focusing on God, on the Lord, by bringing the name of the Lord into the situation. And she does it also by focusing on David's kingship. She does by focusing on David's kingship. Now, of course, and God's promises towards David and his kingship. The beginning of the passage, the prophet and the priest Samuel has died, but God's word hasn't died with him. God's word hasn't died with him. It's still alive and active. And Abigail is reminding David of very important things that were spoken to him by the prophet Samuel. Look at verses 28 in this passage. Verse 28. Please forgive the trespass of your servant, for the Lord will certainly make my Lord a sure house, because the Lord is fighting the battles of the Lord. And evil shall not be found in you as long as you live. Evil shall not be found in you as long as you live. And then again in verses 30 to 31. And when the Lord had done, this is Abigail speaking, and when the Lord has done to my Lord according to all the good that he has spoken concerning you and has appointed you prince over Israel, my Lord shall have no cause for grief or pangs of conscience for shedding blood without cause. And so on. Very important words here. She's appealing to David to spare Nabal's life on the grounds of his kingship. She's giving counsel and she's reminding him of his divine call to be a man who leads Israel in righteousness and who fights the battles of the Lord and not who fights personal vendettas. Well, really what she's saying is calm down. Calm down. We all know that you're going to be king. You know that. Act in a way that's appropriate to the calling that God has given to you. That's what she's really saying. But she's saying it very nicely. Very nicely. And Abigail really finally here reminds him that God is bigger than all of his enemies. And that he should wait for God to bring judgment. And not for David to do it himself. We see this again in verses 29 and again in verse 26. When she speaks of Nabal, actually. Now then, my Lord, as the Lord lives and as your soul lives, because the Lord has restrained you from blood guilt and from saving with your own hand, now then let your enemies and those who seek to do evil to my Lord be as Nabal. What's she saying here? She has pleaded for Nabal's life, but she also recognizes that men like Nabal are on a course to destruction and God will himself deal with them. And David grants Nabal's life to her and is thankful himself that God has restrained him from foolish actions. Verse 36, she returns and she finds Nabal having a feast like a king. Verse 36, that of course is the problem in this passage. Nabal thinks that he's a king. And that's the problem with all of us in our lives. When we live independently of God, we think we're kings. And we put on feasts and all the rest for ourselves, so to speak, and we parade ourselves as kings. But actually, God shows him in this passage that he is king. And when Abigail tells him about this encounter with David, his heart dies within him. He's either had a stroke or a heart attack, just with the sheer fright of the reality of the circumstances that almost came upon him. And 10 days later, God struck him and he died. You see, God is king, and yet at the same time, God is gracious. He struck this man and he gave him 10 days to come to his senses. And in that 10 days, to put himself right with God, to repent of his sin. You see, often we may clean up other people's messes, or other people may clean up our mess. But the mess of your sin, or my sin, that is something you have to sort out yourself with God. You see, that is a hole that no one can pull you out of other than the Lord Jesus Christ. You need to look at that, and you need to see that you're in a hole that needs to be pulled out by Jesus. Here then, we learn in this passage something of a foolish man, and whereby we ourselves can be made wise. Let me just finish by saying this. Men, we all need an Abigail who can calm us down, who can speak to us and say, look, in a very nice way, stop being such a fool. May that say to us very nicely that we all, each of us, every one of us, ultimately needs Jesus. Because Jesus is the only one who can pull us out of the hole that we've made for ourselves. Well, may God bless his word to us, and may to him be the praise and the glory.